Well, we get the second hour underway by hopping on board the telephone line and welcoming in, and I promise there's only a small kickback coming our way from the Globe, our friend, the terrific baseball writer from the Globe, Peter Abraham. Pete, welcome in.
Richard, it is my honor to be on the same time or the same day as Mr. Ryan, who's was one of my idols growing up. He's the best.
He is not bad. And you know what? We always say this about Bob. What amazes me and what inspires me is that for somebody who's been doing it as long as he still has that same enthusiasm for the games.
You know, here's something, and it's one of the best parts about working at the Globe. I've got to know Bob, and he has Red Sox season tickets, and he goes to almost all of the home games. And almost every game, he comes up to the press box and gets the lineup sheet and stops by my seat, and we chat for a few minutes about the Red Sox, and then he heads down to watch the game. And it's probably like the best part of the day, just talking a little bit of sports with Bob Ryan. And I love that he comes up to get a lineup sheet because he keeps score every game, and it's the best thing.
No question about that. Well, it's been an interesting offseason so far for the Red Sox. Got their man in Garrett Crochet. I like that signing. What do you think is the next priority for them?
Yeah, I mean, they have what seems to be a pretty set shopping list in terms of they need a right-handed hitter who can fit somewhere in the middle of their lineup. Craig Breslow has said he feels like they need to get two starters, and they've only gotten one so far, and they would like to add to their bullpen. So it seems like they have a pretty good idea of what they want to do. And they were pretty positive at the winter meetings last week that they were going to come away with a starter, and they did. And now the market's kind of in a reset as teams figure out who else is there, and players maybe consider other teams now that other players have made their decisions. But everything that they need is still available, I think, whether it's by a trade or free agency.
Well, they were willing to apparently spend pretty significant money on Max Fried. The Yankees, I think, maybe overpaid at $218 million. What kind of guys are out there that they might have some interest in?
Well, I think Corbin Burns would be somebody who would fit them pretty well. A guy who had success in the American League East last year with Baltimore, and still somebody who's got, you know, 5, 6, 7 good years left in him as a starting pitcher. I also think they still have, even with trading for Crochet, they still have the players that they could use to swing a deal with somebody, whether it was with Seattle or Miami or some of the teams that have pitching surplus. And there are other interesting free agents out there, guys that they would have to look at too. And in terms of the right-handed hitter, the guy I would really like to see him get would be Teoscar Hernandez. And being around the Dodgers last year in the playoffs, a couple of the people around them said clearly Ohtani was the MVP of the National League, but they felt like Hernandez was the MVP of their team with what he brought to the clubhouse, what he added to their lineup in terms of his right-handed bat, his presence around the team. And to hear them talk about what he meant to the team, that to me seemed like a guy who would be a great fit with the Red Sox, an older guy who's a good player, a good hitter, and could maybe bring together that clubhouse and kind of put him on a path where, you know, every day is important, and, you know, he brings a winning attitude and helps build a winning culture, and they could use a guy like that.
How many years do you think they might have to commit to get a guy like Hernandez?
Yeah, he's very popular. I mean, I thought, for sure, if he was going to stay with the Dodgers, he would have done it by now, because he had been on record saying his goal was to stay with the Dodgers, and that hasn't happened yet. So that suggests there's some kind of impasse there, and that, you know, he's not getting to where he wants to get to. Now, whether that's money or whether that's years, I would think it would probably have to be a 3-year deal for him. But he's, you know, the way he hits and the way he plays, he could, you know, certainly play the outfield and then transition to be a DH. I don't know that a 3-year deal would be something prohibitive for the Red Sox.
Now, in terms of Crochet, do you see them maybe as soon as the start of the season signing him to some kind of a contract extension?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if in spring training, you know, we get an email one day saying, hey, there's going to be a press conference at 4:00 in the media room, and, you know, Garrett Crochet signed the new contract, because he has been, I pretty clear that he wants to settle in with the team and be part of a team and move his family to a city and settle in. And he knew he couldn't do that with the White Sox because eventually they were going to trade him, the way that franchise was going, and his greatest value to them was to bring in prospects for part of their rebuild. And I think he's going to like the atmosphere with Boston. They're run by a former pitcher. They've got Andrew Bailey, who's very well regarded as their pitching coach. They've got Justin Willard as their director of pitching. I think those are all guys that are like-minded. And Crochet is going to like that atmosphere and you know, the fact that they'll have ideas for him how he can get even better. And also the pitching staff, you know, Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford, those are all guys who are around his age and I think he'd fit in well with. And it's to me it seems like if you're a guy in that position, the idea of setting roots in Boston and getting a long-term contract and taking care of your family, that's something he's going to want to do.
We're talking with Pete Abraham here on Downtown. They also had the signing of Chapman. Do they see him as solely an eighth-inning guy, or might he have a similar role that he had last year where occasionally he chimes in and maybe ends up with 8 or 10 saves as the year goes on?
Yeah, well, what's interesting about his contract is the bonus payments are all geared towards games that he pitches, not games that he finishes.
Mm.
So if he had, you know, if he had it in his mind that he was going to be closing, it would be the other way around. And I don't think the Red Sox see him as a closer. That's one thing that they talked about at the winter meetings. They see him as somebody who's going to pitch, you know, obviously late in games, but not necessarily as the closer. And it's funny, they haven't really committed to Liam Hendricks being their closer, although when they signed him, it certainly felt like, you know, he would be the guy who would eventually take over for Kenley Jansen. So they have Liam Hendricks. They have Chapman. They have Justin Slayton, who I think, you know, probably one day will be a closer. So they have some different options. I don't see them. I think it would be a surprise if they were to go out and sign a you know, sort of a front row closer, a guy who's, you know, been a closer his whole career. But I don't know that it's necessarily that you could go to spring training and say, well, it's definitely going to be Hendricks. I think they want to see Hendricks pitch in certain situations before they make that decision.
Did Vaughn Grissom show them enough at the end of the season to be the front runner for the second base job?
Boy, that's a good question, because there are probably, five or six guys who will come into camp thinking that they could be the second baseman. And they probably all, you know, to some degree have a chance. And the situation is a little bit different because if, you know, you have to wonder where Christian Campbell is going to fit in. He's kind of been a multi-position guy, but second base could be where he ultimately fits the best if it's not the outfield. So that's part of the, I think, the equation too. That's going to be an interesting one. It wouldn't surprise me even if they were to pick up another infielder and somebody who could do that, because none of those guys they used last year, and they had it was a rotating cast of guys who played second base. Every day you'd have to walk into the clubhouse and look at the lineup and say, okay, this is the guy who's playing second base today. And I just wonder if you know, they're not sold on any of those guys, and they could still keep looking.
The Big Four is down to a Big Three after they dealt a Teal in the Crochet trade. Do you think we could still see them trade another one of those top three prospects?
I don't think so, and I'd be very surprised at that. Certainly not Roman Anthony, who's, you know, roughly considered the best prospect in the game.
Mm.
They've put in a lot of time with Marcelo Mayer. And Christian Campbell is a guy they, you know, they caught a break on. He was a later round draft pick who's really come into his own. And even the other notable prospect they traded for Crochet, Braden Montgomery, you know, there were some people who said the Red Sox kind of had a big five because that people thought so highly of Braden Montgomery. So you never can say anybody's untouchable, because there could always be a deal that comes up. But I'd be really surprised if any of those remaining three guys were dealt.
This one has kind of gone under the radar, but have they got a potential diamond in the rough in this backup catcher that they acquired, Carlos Narvaez?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that the Yankees people that I spoke to were all very complimentary of him. And then you look at, you know, his numbers over the course of the year, and I think he appeared in 6 games. But the minor league people that I know, some of the minor league people with the Yankees, and they think very highly of him. He's a very good catcher. He's a guy who's really hit at AAA, and he just didn't have a place with the Yankees because they had enough catchers. He was a guy they would call up if they had a doubleheader, or, you know, they had an extra player because of a rainout, whatever it may be. He was that guy, and he didn't get a whole lot of opportunities. He just turned 26, so he's not, you know, he's certainly not a young guy anymore. But the Red Sox seem to think that, you know, this is the guy who's going to be their backup catcher.
The Yankees, of course, made the deal to get Clay Bellinger, but that's quite a step down from having Juan Soto in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, Bellinger, to me, seems like a good fit for them, because he could play center field, which would allow Aaron Judge to move over to right field, and that takes some of the wear and tear off his body after he played center field all last year to accommodate Soto. And Bellinger's also a very good first baseman, and they don't necessarily have a first baseman, so he could play a lot there. And fit, I think he fits their lineup pretty well, especially if Jason Dominguez, who's their big prospect, if he shows he can handle one of the outfield spots, that gives them a lot of versatility with Bellinger. And I give the Yankees credit. They absorbed the blow when they lost Juan Soto. There's no question about it. But they immediately went out and got, you know, landed three players who, you know, can probably really help them. And when you add up the WAR for each of those guys, you know, the three guys they have are about half a point of WAR away from what Soto gave them last year. So they really, you know, you can't say, you know, there's no replacing Juan Soto. There's only one guy like that. But they've gone out and got three players where you can arguably say they have a chance to be as good as they were last year.
Barring any acquisitions out there in the outfield, what do you think will be the starting outfield when the season opens?
For the Yankees or for the Red Sox?
For the Red Sox.
Well, that's a good question, too, because there's so many different possibilities. And I do think they would be wise to settle on a center fielder. I think the best outfields that I've seen defensively have somebody who's the everyday center fielder, and the other two guys can play off of that. Now, whether that's Sadon Rafaela, who I think has a chance to be a gold glove center fielder, I'm not sure. He needs to show he can be a more consistent hitter. Jarren Duran certainly showed he can handle center field last year, but he could also play left field. And Willy Abreu, to me, the best Red Sox teams I've covered have had a good right fielder because there's so much room to cover at Fenway Park. And you need a guy who can really play right field. And you go back to Shane Victorino in 2013, Mookie Betts in 2018, Trot Nixon when he was here. They've always, you know, the Red Sox, when they have a contender, always have a good right fielder. So I would leave Abreu in right field. He's really shown he can play that position. But he also needs to improve on his hitting, too. So there's a lot of different combinations that could end up in the outfield. And I think at some point next season, you'll see Roman Anthony be part of that mix.
Well, Pete, we always have to talk a little music with you, and I was remembering a wonderful interview a friend of our show, Jim Axelrod of CBS, did last year with Bruce Springsteen, and Springsteen was making the point that if there was one album that he would want people to listen to and say, this is what Bruce Springsteen did, it was Nebraska. Which album is it for you?
That's a good question. I would probably say Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Mm.
Because that was the first one I really got into when I was younger. And Nebraska was one, when I first heard it, I was like, what's he doing here? This is an interesting, you know, this is a big departure from what he was doing. And but as you listen to it more and as I've gotten older, I've really come to appreciate that record. And the best part, I think, of Nebraska is you can play every song. Obviously, he did all of those songs solo when he released the record. But I've heard almost all of those songs with the full band, and they're like a different version of the same song. And some of those songs in a concert setting with the full band, like, are a completely different tone, and they're actually like fun concert songs, which you wouldn't expect. Like certainly, like Johnny 99 on the record is like a very depressing song. But you see Johnny 99 at Gillette Stadium, and it's like a whole different thing. So, yeah, Nebraska's a fascinating record, and that's why I guess that's why they're making the movie.
Yeah, well, and you're right too. I don't think I got Nebraska when I was young. I had to get some mileage on the tires before I understood better what he was doing with that.
Yeah, it's I can remember when I was in college, I took a job in the summer for a few months at a factory in my hometown, and it was a terrible job, but I needed to make some money to buy a car. And I remember sitting in my car. We had like a 45-minute lunch hour. I remember sitting in my car listening to Bruce Springsteen records and him talking about, you know, blue-collar themes and everything. I'm like, well, I'm living a Bruce Springsteen record right now. There's certain songs that come on, and I'm like, yep, I was sitting in my car. My car that leaked oil because I was working at a factory so I could buy a new one.
There you go. Bruce knew. Even though he'd never been there himself, he understood.
That's right.
Well, Pete, we appreciate it. As always, it is great talking with you. Thanks so much for making time for us today. And we'll catch you in whatever iteration of the show we got next. It might be a podcast. It might be coming out to people on 8-track tape. Whatever it is, we'll reach out to you.
Ooh, 8-track tapes. I used to have a lot of those.
There you go.
Hey, Rich, it's always I've always enjoyed coming on, and you know, whatever it is you're doing, I'd be happy to be a guest, no question.
Well, we appreciate it. Thanks, Pete. Have a great holiday, and we'll catch up with you in the new year.
All right, same to you, Rich. Thank you.
Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe with us here on Downtown.